or Satan wants to use your story to hinder you from telling other people about Jesus, when in fact your story and sharing it can be the thing that causes people to see God's redemption and grace more powerfully than anything. And that's what we see in the story of Peter.
Our goal on this podcast is to know Jesus better and by the power of his Spirit, do better, so together we can be a little better.
Well, welcome to A Little Better, and you have arrived. He is risen. You're supposed to say he is risen indeed. But we have been building to this for so long. The series, sadly and joyously, is over. We got there with the final week of Eyewitness Account with Easter. And I know, Drew, you were waiting a long time to preach this message. Seemed like you were excited about it for a long time. But hey, let's just pause. For those who did hear it, those who didn't hear it, just remind us, recap it. Where did we go on Easter?
Yeah, we looked at the angle of Peter and his story, his denial and his failure. Like when Jesus, from a human standpoint, needed him the most, it felt like Peter let him down in a huge way, denied him. Mm-hmm. And we just talked about how like we can all relate to Peter's failure because we feel like in times of our lives through our sin, we've let God down. Mm-hmm. And yet the resurrection is the pinnacle of God redeeming our failures. And he redeemed Peter's story. And because of the resurrection, he can redeem yours. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just a beautiful picture of the hope that the resurrection brought mm-hmm. Peter. Yeah. And can bring us.
Yeah, yeah. If you can't see, Jason DeGraff is joining us on the couch here, who, as we, you know, was here a couple weeks ago. Thanks again for mm-hmm. your contribution to the series. Nate Miller also made an incredible contribution. And here we are. And I got to tell you, I'm going to blindside you guys with this, but let's start light because there's plenty of heavy ahead. But I love the scene at the end of this gospel of breakfast on the beach.
Yeah.
Doesn't that sound great? I mean, have you guys ever had breakfast on the beach, or where is your favorite place to have breakfast? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good question.
I mean, my favorite place is at a restaurant where I'm not cooking or cleaning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Shout out a local place, right? Like in Webster, if you live in Webster. I love, I say shout out local place. I forget the name. Simply Crepes. Okay. Simply Crepes is really good.
It is good.
But yeah, I mean, who wouldn't love breakfast on the beach?
Yeah.
They're probably eating fish and bread.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I'll go for the pancakes and chocolate chips.
Yeah. I haven't had a lot of fish for breakfast, but, yeah, as far as shout outs go, Pat's Coffee Mug on South Clinton Avenue.
Right. Cash only.
I mean, I got to say, what's that?
Cash only.
Do you have to be
important detail?
It is important detail. But yeah, it's cash only. Honestly, I got to say, in the best way possible, it's a dive. I mean, it's such a great dive. The food is fantastic. Mm. Pat, it's literally Pat there cooking it all.
It's interesting. You've really never taken me there.
No.
Talk about denial and betrayal.
Oh, man. Yeah. Now we've got to repent and do that. That'd be definitely. Any favorites over there?
Oh, man. I like Eastridge Diner. I like mm-hmm. Cheese Diner. There's that in Webster, which is the Mama's.
Mama Lore's?
Yeah,
Mama Lore's.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Steve's Diner. They got multiple locations.
Yep, they have some locations.
Huge pancakes.
Yeah, yeah. I do feel like breakfast is the place I want to have a meal with my friends. My brother comes to town periodically. We have breakfast together. It's just with friends. There's just like a fun and an intimacy there. So anyway, it's just a beautiful picture. But yeah, so there was some joy, you know, at the end of this story. Mm. But it was a long road getting there. Drew, why don't you tell us about, I think you wanted this to be the climax of the series, or am I wrong? And just tell us a little story about getting to this message, why you liked Peter's story, wanted it. Was there a change in your heart, you know, as you just kind of came close to this message?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things I love about this being the Easter message. One, I love that as guests come, it's not the same old, same old. I think this is not what they expected. And so I love that. I love all of us can relate to Peter's story, right? Mm-hmm. Like we have all felt that failure. Like I let somebody down, But yeah, in the what I love about it is it, the resurrection doesn't leave us there. And this the thread work of God in our lives, we are all like at the same spot, right? We're at that hopeless failure moment. But the thread of the resurrection and Jesus coming to earth is to pull us out of that and into a new life, into hope and redemption. And I think what I love, why I designed the series to end here, is I think it's just a beautiful hidden picture of what the resurrection does in our life.
Jason, what's it been like for you on this road? You were part of the teaching team. As we put these messages together, you got to preach one of the messages. You saw the target that we were shooting for.
Yeah, I love, I often think in like an apologetics or defense of the faith mindset. So when we first went out, you know, I think one of the greatest reasons to believe the resurrection, you know, is because of the eyewitness accounts. So I was excited to share their stories. One, just to like make it like, here, we're looking at history. These are real people, and this is why you should believe. And then even when just speaking on Judas, I was excited to touch on that because it is such a weighty thing, and it's something that people really go through. What was tough when I was preaching on Judas was not to preach about Peter, because they're in many ways a very similar story. You know, they are, you know, two of the 12 who are closest to Jesus. And in many ways, they're both a sort of betrayal. I mean, they're different, but they both responded in a rejection of Jesus, and they both came out a different way. Yeah. And so why did Judas take his life, you know, not turn back to Jesus? Why did Peter find hope? Where was the redemption? Ultimately, it came down to the resurrection. Like, Judas didn't see the resurrected Jesus. And Peter, you know, ran to the tomb. He couldn't wait. And that was the beginning of his story of redemption.
Yeah, some of it, you wonder, like, in the days in between, we don't get a lot of like, where did Peter go from here? You know what I mean? I would love to see that and know, like, okay, how defeated was he, right? And I mean, obviously he's defeated in the moment, but like, man, from that moment, like those days in between the resurrection had to be incredibly hard for him.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like the pain got even worse.
Right.
And the regret got even worse. Right. Because Jesus is now dead. Like, it's one thing to betray your friend, but then to come back and be like, I'm sorry. I blew it. You needed me. He didn't, he didn't get that opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. And that distance between the resurrection and the restoration, right? Because, I mean, here's Jesus risen from the dead, but to still wonder what that meant for him, because it could have been Jesus saying, I know who my true friends are now, and you bet on the wrong horse, and this ship is sailing. We're, you know, Peter, you blew it. You could have been part of it. You know, I'm sure Peter had those thoughts of Jesus moving on without him, but for Jesus to come back and to restore and include Peter, it's mind-blowing.
It's interesting, like we were talking about this beforehand, you can believe the resurrection and not feel like my life is restored. And I think that was kind of where Peter was at. Like, Jesus appeared to him, you know, and he was like, okay, like, maybe my story is not over. I did betray Jesus, but now there is a chance, you know, for my story to be redeemed. But it wasn't until they sat down on the beach together and Jesus asked him three times, do you love me? That the implications of Jesus' resurrection came to full bear in the redeeming of the story of Peter. And I think a similar thing could be said in our own life, that we can know that Jesus rose from the dead, but it's not until you go back and you deal with the past, you have a conversation, that you begin to apply what Christ has done on your behalf.
I think I've loved that about this series. I think there's a hidden hope that hopefully people are catching on, right? As we look at these eyewitness accounts, we have to remember these are people who have walked with Jesus for 3 years. They saw him do, like, okay, what I would call like small miraculous, like water into wine. That feels like, oh, pretty miraculous, but not like, oh, they saw him raise somebody from the dead, right? Like, so you got like semi-miraculous and like holy smokers, that's ridiculous. And yet every one of them in their walk with Jesus, you see this progression that the resurrection finishes or brings about. And I don't know about you guys, but like, as I've, one thing that has really encouraged me in the series is to know, like, it's okay to be where I am and I still have room to go, you know, like there's this process of discipleship. Like Jesus told these guys numerous times, this was going to happen. He taught them, he showed them, and they still didn't get it. And I just, it gives me hopes, like as I walk with Jesus, like there's more to come. There's more, like Peter's redemption work wasn't like in an instant, like, oh, I believe this, everything's changed, nothing else will change. It's this progression of even people who was with Jesus, saw his power and his might, and like with their own eyes, still kind of live like I do. We're like, I know what Jesus said and I believe it, but like I still, like you said, I gotta continue to believe it and grow in it deeper. And when I grow up in deeper, it like continues to change me, redeem me. And I think that just gives me hope. Like, man, I realize I have failed, and in the past, God has redeemed some of my failures, but there's still some he needs to redeem. And that's the process of how God works in our lives.
Yeah. I love that too. It's just, you read the gospels and you read these stories and these narratives, and it is just so true to the messiness of life, right? So it's just what's going on there. Hey, I don't want to get too far before we pause. I really want to get back to the impact of this message on each of our lives, you know, as well as the people, you know, we're sharing it with. But shout out to the video team. Oh my goodness. I mean, I was blown away by that video. Drew, you set that video up like halfway through your message, and we should have a mic on our producer, Taylor. She's behind the camera. But I know that Meg and Drew Davidson, Taylor, Benedict, our producer. I don't know who else was on the crew, probably a few other people, but we, of course, we had all the actors, you know, Amon and Eli, and then a number of kids I didn't even know.
Aero and Kylo, Jason and Nicole West there.
Yep, Natasha jumps in there too, Natasha's mom. There, so, you know, whole family, different people playing different roles. So I look at that and I just, no, that must have been a huge effort. I mean, get all that set up. Drew, what do you know about how that video got conceived? Or
So it's amazing how God works, right? So that actually started. You were there, Brad. I don't know if you remember, but we were writing this sermon, and we read through the betrayal, and we were just like, oh man. You know, it'd be cool if we could modernize this, right? Like, or just do maybe like the chosen version of this. And so like that small idea birthed into our creative team, just brainstorming and storyboarding and re-storyboarding and dreaming up different concepts. And it led to a lot of work. Like, I think one thing I want people to realize is how much work goes into a 5-minute video. You're talking about an all day shoot from 7 a.m. to at night, coordinating people, officers, details, scripts. Like these, I, at some level, I'm guilty of this, and I think our churches, we take for granted the skill and the talent and the giftedness of our teams to make the Bible come alive.
There was no words in that thing.
Right? Not one word.
And it was still complicated.
Yeah, incredible. Yeah, I was just looking at it, and I would just see like just the edits and the shots, and I would go like, it must have taken a long time to collect all that, and just the brilliance of putting it together. And yeah, I might have been in the room where we said, hey, let's modernize this, but that is so far short of where they were.
For sure, yeah.
And I was talking to, I think Taylor had a hand in like the, because to make it that story of, you know, the accident, and then the, you know, the son is guilty, but the father takes the takes the fall. I think Taylor played a role in that. And
One Tree Hill did too. Yep, Taylor okay. and her obsession with One Tree Hill. You never know when you're watching a show, it might impact for the gospel. God uses, he redeems everything.
He redeems it all.
One Tree Hill.
That's true.
But, Taylor is smiling, just
Taylor's
so everybody knows.
Right yeah. now. She's watching yeah. too.
No, I just, I'm sure everyone else, there's many people out there agreeing what I just say. The video is very impactful, for me. I mean, I'm an emotional guy, okay, but I did cry. tears flowed when I saw that video. But and to pack all that in there, the betrayal, the disappointment, but the love and the sacrifice, mm-hmm. and even Jesus stepping in to take our sins, knowing full well what horrible sinners we are. I do want to, so it's interesting because we, Drew, you pre-preached this sermon, and then it's interesting. I mean, the talk, it was a long, long, long talk afterwards, but I think I would say both with the Judas sermon and with this sermon, there was just, this wasn't a sermon for other people. It was just a sermon that worked on me, worked on us, as well. And just for me, I think that question of how can God use me? Mm. I don't think it's any more clear or dramatic, than someone like Peter. How it's hard to imagine blowing it worse, but yet where he goes to, preaches at Pentecost, mm-hmm. Leads the church. And I'm sure there's people out there. I'm sure there's people who are listening, to that message and thinking, God can't use me. Mm-hmm. What I've done is too much. Any heartfelt words, yeah. For people who are wrestling, with that.
One, welcome to the club, right? Like, I think we all feel that, I would add to that question, how could God use me after that mm-hmm. or this?
Right.
That's what I love about the Bible is it's full of people God shouldn't have used,
mm-hmm.
right? From murderers to,
oh boy,
tax collectors, people who cheated on their spouse, people who, mm-hmm. Just deceivers, people who take matters into their own hands. I mean, there is just, it's a conglomeration, prostitutes, mm-hmm. the list goes on and on of people who God shouldn't have used.
Mm-hmm.
And he does. And hey, you can add my name to the list, mm-hmm. probably all of our names to the list.
Mm, absolutely.
That's the beauty of the, I think that's the beauty of the resurrection. It's the beauty of, the story you told is like, Peter failed greatly, and yet he was used mightily mm-hmm. for the kingdom of mm-hmm. God. And here's the hope for all of us. You can be just like Peter.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear the hope of the gospel. And I think there's two angles I would think. It's like, yes, God can forgive me. Yeah, I believe that. I'm thankful for that. But then there's like, but he can't really use me. Like, what I've done mm-hmm. is too bad. We were talking about this in our own stories ahead of time. And I'm like, do I share this? Like, this is very personal. And, mm-hmm. So I was debating. I don't think I've ever shared this publicly, so this is like, here we go.
just not turning back now, bro.
I was in high school, really growing in my faith, very excited about God, decided I wanted to be a pastor through the encouragement of other people in my life. And senior year of high school, I lost my virginity. I was I was a pastor's kid. Deep shame. I hid it, didn't tell anyone. Went off to Bible college to prepare to be a pastor. And in the back of my mind, I just thought, like, oh, well, I'm not qualified to be a pastor. Like, I've blown mm-hmm. it too much. A lot of shame there. A lot of getting up extra early in the morning, reading my Bible, memorizing scripture, trying to be as holy as I can be. But still this nagging, guilt. Mm-hmm. Like, I did this. If someone found out, my aspirations of being used by God as a pastor are, done, mm-hmm. And finally, I remember like there was a sermon in college, a guy preaching like spiritual emphasis week in our chapel services, and just talking about if you regard iniquity in your heart, the Lord will not hear you. And thinking like, okay, like, doesn't matter. Like, the most important thing in my life is that I have like a close relationship with Christ. And I know I lied to my dad. I lied to my sister about my relationship. I gotta deal with this. And so just having that conversation, knowing one, I would really disappoint my dad, as well as like maybe my future pastoral ministry is shot. And then just the grace I received and the redemption and encouragement, like, no, God can still use me. I remember, I don't know if it was an article or hearing something years ago, be at a passion conference or with John Piper, just talking about how many people, because of their sexual sin, feel like God can never use me. And it hinders us from fully going after God and sharing the gospel with other people. And like God or Satan wants to use your story to hinder you from telling other people about Jesus, when in fact your story and sharing it can be the thing that causes people to see God's redemption and grace more powerfully than anything. And that's what we see in the story of Peter.
You know, I think what's interesting about your story and a lot of people's story, because I think we all resonate to your story. Maybe the circumstances are different. And it kind of excites me because like, in, not next series, but the series after that, we're going to kind of dive into the devil a little bit. And I think something people need to know is like a lot of the guilt and shame that you feel, we often think it's coming from Jesus when it's really coming from the enemy. Mm-hmm. The enemy is the one telling you because of that, God can't use you. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's your own voice, right? Sometimes it's just us beating mm-hmm. ourselves up like, hey, I did something so bad, I have to be punished for it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we are the greatest punishers, right? We convince ourselves it was so bad, God can't redeem it. And so I'm just going to beat myself up over it. And if you're there, you feel that way, stop listening to your voice. Stop listening to the devil's voice and start listening to the voice of grace, the voice of truth, and the voice that can actually use your failure in redemption for other people. What I found amazing about God is usually he uses our worst moments as the loudest testimony mm-hmm. for others to hear the gospel of Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, thank you for being so transparent in sharing that story. I think that I feel like I cornered you almost into that, but I didn't know it before today we were talking about it. And I'm not going to tell, you know, my whole story, but I also lost my virginity in college, had the same questions. Could I ever, you know, be in ministry, you know, because of that. But I know for so many that we have a God, he must increase, but I must decrease. So sometimes it's just that sharing, that dealing with, that exposing to that, which opens the door for God to do the work that he wants to do. And thanks, Drew, for that encouragement. That is why we do what we do, why we preach what we preach. That is what the gospel is that your story isn't over and God can and wants to use you. Hmm. Well, listen, please come back. We got a brand new series coming next week. Drew, the name of it is?
It is called By Design, and it's a blueprint for lasting and healthy relationships. So we're going to talk about something that we all have, right? Relationships. And all kinds of relationships, right? Your spouse, your friends, your neighbors, you know, there's so many relationships, but how do we build relationships that last, that are healthy? And so we're going to talk about some of the tools that we need in our relational tool belt.
Please come back. We'll see you soon.